stereo. Don't compare us to anything, this a different scenario. We break records while we pushing the culture forward. Great music and big vibes right in that order. Intellectually petty radio on the stereo. Don't compare us to anything, this a different scenario. We break records while we pushing the culture forward. Great music and big vibes right in that order.
And you are now tuned into another episode of Intellectually Petty Radio, brought to you by M3S3 Clothing. Men make moves and suckers stand still. And as always, on the mighty, mighty, mighty Nerve DJs Radio Network. And I tell y'all this every fucking week, it's because it's true every week. We only rock with legends over here. And today is absolutely no exception. We got screenwriter, author, your favorite comedian's favorite comedian, Heather J. in the building. How you doing, Queen?
Hey.
Hey.
Hi.
How's life? How's life? How's your family?
We're good. We're good. Everything's fine.
I'm sorry. I was talking a lot of shit before we went live. So.
The green room?
Yeah, they kind of fucked me up a little bit. I'm not gonna lie.
We're good. Everything's great over here.
All right, so comedy, started writing comedy in fifth grade, about, correct?
Okay, so I went to an alternative school. It's called Burt International. It still is in existence. It's on Mac and 96.
That's unfortunate. I'm sorry.
No, it's an alternative school. Here's the thing. It used to be in Cass Corridor, what we used to call Cass Corridor, that we now call gentrified Midtown. But we used to call it Cass Corridor. It used to be at like Woodward and like Martin Luther King, or like where Mac becomes Martin Luther King. It used to be right there. Damn. And so as kids, we saw it all. We know you had Jeffrey's Projects a couple blocks away. You had a huge, economically depressed community over there. And we had hookers on our playground. But the teachers were all like, when I think about it now, I'm like, I can't believe our parents dropped us off there every day. Like, did you really drop us off here every day?
Like, it's never crazy. Mind the crack whores. Like, here's your lunch.
All kinds of hookers. Some of them were like trans hookers. It was let me just put it in for politically correct, in the 80s, what we would have been like, dudes, you know what I mean? Like, on the playground.
I went to Cass my first year of high school, so I'm familiar with Cass Corridor.
Right around the corner. We were right around the corner from Cass Tech. We used to go over there and see plays and stuff. Like, when you guys were putting on your plays and stuff, we'd be the kids in the audience or whatever. So our school was, our teachers were like all activists. They were like civil rights activists. They were like hippies, Vietnam draft dodgers. Like, they were these really like super, what we would call super woke. But back then, we had the kind of teacher, like I had a teacher, he would bring his guitar to school and he'd sing like protest war songs. In lieu of teaching us about Vietnam, he'd sing, this is what it really was, and President Nixon, and he'd start crying and stuff. Like, it was just a really different kind of school. He would really go there. And a lot of the teachers, they were all around the same age. So they were all like 60s era. Wow. And they were like 60s, probably early 70s era. And so, yeah, they were like our teachers. Like, what happened to the guys that protested with the long hair? Oh, they became our teachers or whatever. They went back to college and they became our teachers.
That's actually pretty dope, though.
When I think about it now as an adult, I'm like, it really was a fascinating experience. It's just the neighborhood was crazy. But we had the kind of teachers that we could be like, okay, so you want me to write a paper. Can I sing a song? Can I do a skit? Can I? And he'd be like, of course you can. You know, so a lot of my early comedy writing was just me taking an assignment and figuring out how to take an SNL sketch and make it my assignment. So I was actually, it wasn't just me, it was me and my little clique. You know, we were writing, producing improv and sketches in like fifth grade. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's cool.
What was your favorite? Do you remember?
I'm a huge SNL fan. It's the only time I nerd out in Hollywood is when I see SNL people.
Which era do you prefer of SNL?
definitely 80s for me. That's when I discovered it.
Okay.
So for me, it was SNL and Living Color, Mad TV. Like if you're looking at my life through sketch comedy history.
Mad TV so underrated.
Yeah, well, yeah, I loved Mad TV. Fortunately, they weren't all popping at the same time. Like, yeah. I feel like when SNL was kind of hitting a dip, that's when Mad TV was really hot. And then in Living Color wasn't on as long as those other shows. So you had that little period. And I remember we used to go skating every Sunday. And we used to have to wait till In Living Color went off before we could leave to go. Because like you had to see. Because what were we going to talk about in school the next day if you didn't watch that In Living Color sketch? You know what I'm saying? So we definitely, I probably would say for SNL, it's late 80s. Probably like Dana Carvey, Phil Hartman, Kevin Nealon era.
Kevin Nealon was pretty funny.
They're all at the Comedy Store, you know, and I feel obviously because she's dead, but everybody else at the Comedy Store all the time. So sometimes you see them, you're like, oh my God, when I was like 10, I used to watch a VHS. So you know what I'm saying? They just look at you like, okay, crazy.
I needed that pick me up. Yeah.
I'm like, I'll just say it. Yeah.
The 70s was wild though. Like, you know, I was born in 72.
Okay. But,
you know, like looking back at some of them when I was growing up, like the 70s, like the whole was Eddie Murphy the 70s or the 80s?
Eddie Murphy was definitely like 81, 82.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. His era, crazy.
Yeah.
Jim Belushi, Dan Aykroyd, that whole era. I think that was early 80s too.
Yeah.
So yeah, definitely. Yeah. You know what? You're right. Yeah. 80s is classic SNL.
So yeah, that was something. I don't know why my parents didn't make a big deal about me staying up late watching. Probably because it was Saturday night, and it was just me. I wasn't like it was just me and my sister. So and we have an age gap. So when I was around that age, she would have been older, or whatever. So maybe that's why. But now I think back, like y'all just let me be up all night watching SNL. But I watched it every week religiously. I realized when I got older, I didn't get half the jokes. Like, I might watch an old, like, a YouTube or something and be like, I remember this. Would it be like, yo, I see it way different now through grown-up eyes.
Yeah. They were saying something totally different.
Like, oh, I get it now. Yeah, but I do remember watching Eddie Murphy. My sister would record it and seeing, like, tapes and stuff over the years of him. But I'm not going to lie, that's Eddie Murphy's not a comic I look up to like that. To me, by the time I was really into him, he was a movie star.
I mean, if you want to be, we want to be honest. I think Delirious was really like the only special that I remember vividly of Eddie Murphy. Not to say he didn't have others. I don't know.
He had two. He had red leather suit, black leather suit.
Red leather suit.
That's what I call him. I'm like red leather suit, Eddie Murphy, or black, all in black or all in red.
So who's your go-to stand-up comedian?
I loved Chappelle when nobody was talking about Chappelle. I loved Chappelle in the 90s when he was coming on Comedy Central. And, you know, the 90s was when everybody was watching stand-up because he had Comic View on the black side. And then Comedy Central was just starting to pop off. And I remember seeing him and nobody knew who I was talking about. And I'd be like, that one guy, that guy. And my friends would be like, who? Or whatever, because he wasn't really a Def Jam BET. He wasn't as visible on the black side, but he was definitely a Comedy Central guy. And then I feel like I have such an anger when it comes to Chappelle, because I feel like by the time everybody was like, oh my God, I'm like, I've been told y'all, and nobody cared. It's like a part of me that get kind of mad about that, like, why y'all didn't listen to me when I told y'all or whatever. So I'm actually I am a Chappelle fan of his writing and his the way he's just really clever to me. I don't necessarily have to agree with everything he says, but I can still see the art, the brilliance in it. And I like a lot of the white comics. Like I like John Mulaney. Like I love John Mulaney.
I'm not familiar. Because again,
he used to write for SNL too. Okay. He's kind of popular now. He's had some, you know, personal scandals and stuff that have made the blogs. I don't know if that's a good way to introduce somebody, but I like a lot of the like I used to like Louis C.K. a lot before it became gross, and
I like Bill Burr.
I love Bill Burr.
Your man's just hilarious.
He really is. I like it when you can't see it coming, and you're like, man. I love Jim Gaffigan. Like that's another one I love. He's so clean and so corny, but so freaking hilarious. And I can't do what he does, but I can see the skill in it and I can appreciate it. So that's probably, I didn't really, when I first started comedy, I wouldn't watch any. Because I didn't want anybody subconsciously to be in my head.
I feel you on that.
So I purposely went out of my way to not watch comedy for years. That was my, I only like just started watching comedy specials and stuff again, maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
The first set your parents came to.
Oh, my parents have never seen me perform.
Never?
They do not approve.
Oh. Oh, still?
Yeah, no, I did the Apollo. And I don't mean Showtime. I mean, I was booked. My name was on the marquee. And my mother's friend was like, are we going to New York? And my mother was like, we're not doing that. And I just didn't say nothing because I already knew. Like, I just know how they are. It's not so much that I can't be clean. It's just that I can't control other people. So somebody else go up and start talking about something disgusting or weird, my parents are going to get up and walk out. This is a devout Christian household over here. So it's like, we're not even going to play this game. My sister has seen me perform, my nephew, my son, many of my cousins. But it's a handful of relatives that they just not really feeling the whole bar scene. They don't do vulgar language. They don't do R-rated movies and stuff like that. So I understand. So it doesn't bother me. She watches my movies and she has my books, but she's not coming to no live comedy show. You're going to hear my mother in the audience going, filth! It's not going to be worth it. What is this filth? It's not going to be worth it. Somebody going to be like, who mama out there condemning everybody? Mine. Sorry, y'all. My mama going to tell you that's fornication. When you tell your sexual fornication, you don't want to hear that.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yo, so you've written a couple books so far. You got one more on the way?
Mm-hmm. I got one. If I can ever slow down long enough to finish it. It's been almost finished for a long time. I got to eat these. I got to take these people's money.
I'm not mad at that, though.
So I'll be having to work. I got to work.
What do you love the most about comedy and hate the most?
Oh, it's the same answer. People.
You know, oddly, I hate people, too. Like, people are so over-fucking rated.
People are the best. The people are the worst. You know what I mean? It's literally, the politics is hard. Because you want to be Da Vinci and just pick up your brush and paint your Mona Lisa. But the politics, the people make it hard. So there's always some coping, navigating, wheeling, dealing, negotiating. When you just want to go on stage and tell your jokes. But when you get a room full of people and they love everything you say and everybody's laughing together and everybody's having a good time, it's the best. Like, we can't do the job without people, but at the same time, we hate the people.
Does it suck to have, you know, just random people? You have to be funny all the time.
When they pay to see you, yes, that is very true.
No, but like you at the mall or you at the grocery store.
Oh, the hell I don't. Sir, my office hours are from 9 to 5.
Okay, Big Red.
You see me in the food court with my son?
People don't seem to care that much anymore.
I've had some people, I've had some weird approaches. I've had some people come up. Most people kind of come up and they're like, oh, hey, Heather. Or when I was doing, like, over the pandemic, we were doing all that podcasting and we were just doing Clubhouse all the time. We were always, I feel like we were very visible because everybody was sitting at home with nothing to do. I would go to Meijer and somebody would be like, hey, I just watched you. And I'm like, hey, thanks, you know, whatever. But then I'd wheel my basket and they leave me alone. You know what I'm saying? I don't have a lot of terrible experiences with that so far. The DMs are something different. The comment section, that's something different. But in person, most people just, and a lot of people will stare and then come home and DM you like, I saw you at the mall. You're like, did you say hello? Like, why are you weird? Why are you DMing me? You saw me at the mall.
You're an attractive woman.
Well, thank you.
And that's intimidating oftentimes. Add to that you do something in the public sphere.
Okay, but you DM me, so that's what makes it creepy. But you just charge into the game.
Yeah, like, but I do, you can get shot down by yourself. You don't have to be shot down in public.
Yeah, okay. You know, when it comes to me, when men be telling you how men think, you just be like, okay, I'm at that point in my life. I don't try to argue with y'all no more. I'll be like, okay.
And we ain't brilliant.
Yeah, but y'all have a unified way of thinking. One thing I will say, can go to any dude. I can go to a homeless man on Woodward Avenue and be like, so he didn't speak. He'll be like, yeah, because he don't want to get shot down in public. You know, so y'all stick together.
Well, because we all experience the same thing. Women don't.
What?
an unattractive woman does not experience the same thing as a very attractive woman. They just don't. But no matter what a dude looks like, we all experience getting shot down.
Well, rejection, I think even beautiful women can be rejected, just like rich men can be rejected. It's just that men take the lead with that most of the time. So they're in the line of fire because they're initiating the contact more often than not. Oh. But if you get the kind of women, you know, there's some women out there that'll be like, what's your name? You know what I'm saying? You get them kind of women. You ever been at the bar and just look, lady come up and you just see her. She just come in a dude face like, I like you.
God. And I'm a short dude. I don't understand. Like, it'd be the 5'9 chick that weighed 375 pounds. I don't know what you see in me, lady, but I'm scared.
She don't have, listen here. She ain't got nothing to lose.
I'm running.
Life is short.
Like, I can't do nothing with you.
I ain't mad at her. She got more guts than most of us do. Or when most of us just gonna walk past a dude 27 times, so he finally be like, hey.
So you never shot your shot at a guy?
Oh, this, you're going against the brand now. Brand Heather? Of course not. What? Wait, on brand Heather? No.
Oh, my.
What? I don't have to do that. What? But reality, of course. Of course I done flirted.
Okay, well, what's a classic flirt move for women?
Women with game or women without? Ooh.
Both.
Women without game are very direct. Those are those women that just go up to guys and be like, I want some dick. Like, no. Could you imagine riding in the car with her home? Like, did you just walk up to that man and say, are you back in the car with us? He ain't even say okay.
Oh, that's got to be a hurt feeling right there.
That's what I'm saying. Women get rejected.
You can't even get a box away. Like,
that's what I'm saying. Okay. I know some dudes that'll be like, I went out tonight, this girl just came up to me, and I'm just like, no, thank you. And I'm just like, wow, she had to ride home with her friends.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to respond well to that either. You know,
yeah, like, I mean, I don't think anybody likes that level of aggression. Women don't like it. I don't think anybody wants to be objectified in that way.
Well, I don't mind being objectified, but that's a bit much.
Yeah, that's literally saying you don't matter as a person at all.
And that you probably got something. Just
a thought. That was extreme.
I'm just saying.
She might have some good box. You just never know.
No, you don't.
Okay.
No,
I don't know. I've never had.
If that's your go-to move, it's trash.
But if you, I can't talk about people I know personally, but I used to be very close, maybe blood related to someone who, like, we'd go out and she'd be like grabbing guys on the butt and stuff, and I'd just be like, "What is, like?" I used to have to go to the club with her, like, "What is wrong?" That's not what we do. That's what they do. That's not what we do. We bat our eyelashes. We stare. You know how effective a stare is? You could just look at a guy across the bar and just look at him. You tilt your head. Right. He's coming. He's coming over.
And you're going to get a drink out the deal.
If he got it. I mean, you can't tell pockets from across the bar per se. You might think, you know, he might be, okay, well, I'll talk to you later. Like, oh, bruh. I do all girls go to the bar to get drinks. It's the only time we're not feminists. It's the only time we're not feminists.
I kind of hate that. Y'all can go to a bar just butt-ass broke and live your best life.
Guys can, too.
He's going to end up fighting somebody.
Nope, that same girl that was like, I want some. She going to buy everything. You don't like her. You don't like her. We'll endure someone we don't like to get the chicken wings in the bottle. You guys aren't going to do that because, first of all, it emasculates you. And secondly, you don't want to really be stuck with the consequences.
I mean, well, at 2:30 in the morning, last call.
Oh, everybody fine.
Yeah, you know, it's a little different.
Everybody fine.
You know, you might have turned her down at 11 o'clock. Come 2:30.
I mean, she ain't that bad. I mean, she got some nice lips. Like, right, that's, when you know. That's when you start finding individual. That she dressed nice.
Hey, you know.
Justification. Right, you need a ride.
Okay, so a woman with game. How does she flirt?
It's mostly nonverbal. That's what I mean. I mean, we can literally just look at somebody. We can wave. We can just be like, hi, he's coming over. It doesn't take as much because the men are used to getting shot down. So when you lay it out, like, this is how, like, I don't want to say stupid men are. This is how naive men are.
Well, you are pretty stupid. I'm okay with that.
If a girl is just nice to you, you think it means she wants to have sex with you. And it's like, no, she literally was just saying hello because she's human and you spoke. But if you go to work every day and a girl comes into your job and every day she goes, hi, by the end of the week, you're like, she won't me. And it's like, no, bro, she literally has to pass your desk to get to her desk. And she's just that. But because men are kind of naive in that way, you know, women, you know, with certain intentions could definitely use that to their advantage. Just be a little nice.
Yeah.
He's gonna tell you about his little boring job for real. So the credit union, what y'all be doing up in there? So you, how long you think you might? So okay,
that's cold. That's
a, so you a 7 mile boy? Okay, I see you Cartier. That's all you gotta do. Just give him a little bit. It really don't take much for men to feel. Men are so deprived, I think, of day to day interactional kind of love because they have to pretend they're tough and they can't cry and stuff like that. I don't think it takes much.
You know what? Chris Rock said something pretty profound in that what do you say? Men don't get conditioned. We have conditional love. Like babies and women get unconditional love. We don't get that shit. We have to offer something.
I would say babies and dogs. I would say pets. Household pets and kids. I don't think women get unconditional love either. It's too many women that get left raising kids for y'all to say that. Man. I just think that once you stop being that little innocent kind of, that innocent level cute, that the conditions start to apply. I don't agree with everything he says about stuff like that. I think he'd be a little bit bitter sometime, but I think he's very intelligent. Yeah, I mean.
After you get to a certain point in life, especially if you hit 40, you got some bitterness built up.
You gotta fight it though. You gotta be grateful. Yeah, you know what kills bitterness? Gratitude. Gratitude kills bitterness.
No, it don't.
Yes, it does.
It just postpones it.
You gotta do 30 days of gratitude. You do 30 days of gratitude, you're gonna let a whole lot of stuff go.
Okay, what's 30 days of gratitude?
You have to be grateful
for 30 days.
But for different things, you have to come up with different things every day. So if once you know the first couple of days, you're like, I'm grateful for my mama, I'm grateful for my bank account, I'm grateful for my kids. By day 10, you're like, I'm grateful that McDonald's wasn't out of the shake machine, wasn't broken. I'm so grateful that I got all the green lights to work today. And it really makes you dig deep for the small gratitudes. And by the end of the month, it's a really dope experience. You should try it.
Yeah.
I recommend everybody do 30 days of gratitude annually.
And what happens at, you know, after the 30 days, you go back to being bitter?
No. Once you give yourself 30 days, it only takes 8 days to kind of form a new thought process. Mm-hmm. So once you become aware of the small things, the little things that we're grateful for, whether you believe in God or not, you're going to find the universe. Like, let's be real, right now in Michigan we're grateful for spring. If spring came, we'd be so grateful for spring. And it just kind of gives you, it kind of forces you to step outside of yourself and your own little problems and just see the universe and the earth and what's beautiful about our existence. And it kind of will quell some of that anxiety a little bit. And it's gonna be hard to be mad at somebody. I know this is called the intellectually petty. But it's gonna be hard to be petty for a couple of days.
You know what though? I think you have a unique vantage because you are one of the few people that are doing what you were born to do. Most of us are doing something. We had a different dream, and so we're not 100% satisfied all around. You know what I mean? Like, you got to go to work and it's basically just to pay bills. It's not, I can't wait to get to work because I love doing this. That gives you a whole different perspective.
I agree. However, the road to this particular Xanadu was paved with a lot of blood, sweat, and tears. So it was years of not having any money. You know what I mean? Like, it was years of people questioning your decisions and teachers. Something as simple as you take your son to school and your son's teacher's looking at you like, why don't you have a job during the day? Like, what do you do? You know what I mean? Like, little society isn't really kind to performing artists on their ascension up.
Yeah.
They love us once we reach a certain level.
Yeah.
But that road, them first few years where you're like, hey, so I really just want to sing and I'm in the studio every day and I'm writing and I'm grinding. But hey, I don't have any money because I'm putting everything into my dream and yeah. I don't want to work a 40-hour job. Oh, you a loser. You broke. You this. Go get a job. Da, 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 da. That's what they say. But then if he sells a record and he's number one tomorrow, I remember when you used to be singing your little song. That's how, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
it's kind of easy to look now and say, oh, you get to do what you love. But when I first, my first year in LA, I slept on a couch. I couch surfed for 1 year in an apartment where I was not really welcome. You know what I mean? So ooh. It was like, it was a period where they wanted me to go. And I was like, sorry, y'all, the dream. Okay. Like, I'm going ahead and stay on this, work my plan. I didn't move out here to fail or whatever. So it's easy to say, because my last apartment, I recently had to move out of my apartment in West Hollywood. I had a nice apartment and it was adorable. It was just me by myself. It was adorable. And my friends would come visit me and they'd be like, oh my God, I wish this was me. I wish I was living in LA and I could see the Hollywood sign from my apartment and you could see these mountains and it was just sun. And I was like, yeah, but don't forget the first year I lived here, I slept on a couch. I worked at Macy's. I walked back and forth to work every day. You know what I mean? I paid the girl I lived with, I paid her $400 a month to sleep on her couch. You know what I mean? So, and every time something, she was having a bad day, because that's how it was. When she was having a bad day, that's when she would be like, we ain't moving. But if she was good, we were good. If she was having a bad day, we were moving.
Hey, $400 to sleep on my couch, and you ain't never got to go.
Yeah, I mean, I cleaned, I cooked. I thought I was a good tenant, but whatever. That's in the past. But I'm just saying that's what it was. I didn't know where I was. I didn't know if I was north, south, east, or west. Everything in LA is 20, 30 minutes from everything else. I had to figure out how to get places. I had to navigate. I had to learn this new environment. I'm coming from Detroit.
Yeah.
I'm coming from a very unique environment. And I'm going into a place where I'm trouble. When I walk in, I'm the trouble. Because I'm the one that kind of has a chip on her shoulder. Because Detroiters, we walk around with a little chip. And so now I'm walking into this room, but I have to some kind of way figure out how to be likable. Because if I'm not likable, they're not going to put me on stage. If I'm not on stage, I can't progress.
Can't do
if
your
I
thing.
Don't, yeah, you know what I mean? So it's like, I got to figure out how to get on stage. So I can't walk in, you know, Detroiters walk in like, who is you? Whatever, you ain't better than me. I got to walk in like, oh my God, you're so amazing. You're just, oh. You know what I mean? Like, that was hard. That took many several months of practice, because I would just stand outside and be like, I don't even want to go in there because I have to be so fake. And so, I don't know how to do that.
What was the turning point where you like, oh, you know what? It all makes sense now. This was worth it.
I saw. Okay, so money, it's all about how money moves, right?
Mm-hmm.
In Detroit, we understand how money moves. The good, the bad. We understand how somebody could work at Chrysler and get a whole bunch of money and then get a profit sharing check and they can have two Mercedeses in the driveway and a boat. We understand how that's possible. They're going to be working $80 to $100 a week, but they're going to have the lifestyle, the things they want. California is, the industry is not cars. It's entertainment. So you have to figure out how does money move? There is no plant. There's no factory. There's no way. You just show up every day and do this and get this. You gotta figure out how to get in that stream where people are seeing money. They don't hustle in LA. Like Detroit, we hustle. You need some money? Oh, I need some money. I'm about to go do some hair. I'm about to go braid some hair. I'm about to sell these food stamps. They don't do that. There's no hustle. So when you broke, you broke. But then when you get money, you get money. Okay. So I watched it. I watched people that were new like me on the scene, and I watched them get casted on TV shows. I watched them get writing gigs. I watched them pull up in fancy cars, pull up in Teslas. Well, you were just asking me for $20 3 months ago. You got a Tesla. You know what I mean? So it's like, okay, it's different from what I have at home, but you're not in Kansas anymore. You know what I mean? So I had a talk with myself. I literally remember it because I was walking home from the Comedy Store, and I had to walk like a mile and a half to this one bus that would take me to my couch that I slept on. Okay. And I had to walk, and I walked like a mile to this bus. And I was walking, and I was so frustrated because I didn't know it would be this hard. You know what I mean? So I was trying to make my peace with it. Like, do you stay? Do you go back home? Like, what do you do? And by the time I got home, I was like, all right, this is what it is. You have to now make your peace with it and move forward. And that was a turning point for me.
You know, I some years ago, interviewed David Arnold.
I love David.
Rest in peace to him.
And oh, we all love David.
Yeah, when I got the interview, that was like that was a big interview for me. I was thrilled, excited.
Mm-hmm.
But he has some similar stories.
Yeah. They've got it out the mud.
He got it out the mud. Yes.
Yeah. It's like a part of you that doesn't want to tell the stories because, again, coming back to your Michigan home, it's like, yeah, I was broke. I was this, I was that. And you kind of worry about what people are going to think. But I also know that other people need to hear this. Like, okay, you're literally starting over. You're moving to this brand new environment. You're moving to an industry town. You're starting over. They don't know you. It doesn't matter that you headlined your local home comedy club or that you were the funniest guy on the Trait Choice Awards. Like, that doesn't mean anything to them. You know what I mean? So they don't know you, and it's a million of you that got off the plane today. So what are you going to do? You going to play our game or you going to go? Because we don't care. We don't care if you stay. We don't care if you go.
And like then once you kind of accept going to that, college.
Yeah.
You're just a regular person.
Yep. Not to say that you won't still be that guy eventually, but it's not going to be freshman year first day.
No.
Because now you got to learn about this environment. You got to learn how this world works. And that's a learning curve or whatever. But I took a lot of inspiration when David would talk about what he went through, what it was like for him. Because when I met him, he was that guy. So if he wouldn't have told me, I wouldn't have known. And I probably wouldn't have believed him if he would have, you know, like, oh, yeah, I used to be like, not you. You're the best. Like, who would? He had to pay his dues, too. So,
man. And just in the few comics that I have had, you know, discussions with, the comedic struggle is real. it just from the outside looking in, it appears that other comics almost make sure that you pay your dues.
Yeah, it's like church. It's like a church. It's like a fraternity mixed with a church. So it's the comedy club is definitely sacred, and whatever the rules of the club are, we're gonna follow them. Just like church, but it's a fraternal hazing, kind of like a frat or a sorority. So you can say you want to do comedy, but that doesn't mean we accept you. We have to see you moving like we move. The internet comics kind of can circumvent some of it now, but a lot of them want the prestige that comes with being one of us. So they have their following and they have their monetized pages. But when they come around us, they're still like, I want that respect thing that y'all have, though. And it's like, oh, we got to do the work we do. You know what I mean? It's not a viral video. It's not how we got here. We got here one laugh at a time.
So, is it a cheat code?
I don't think it's a cheat code to be internet comedians. I just think that they have a different struggle because they also have to keep putting that content out. Like, they got to... You know, if you pay attention, you can see when they run out of ideas.
Yeah, and it's ugly too. When they fall off a cliff.
They take that one meme. Everybody's done. They do their little. See, I feel like this.
Oh
Man. You out of sketch ID. You out of funny. You ran out of funny.
Or they only got that one bit and they run it into the ground.
Into the ground. And when they try to veer off, people are like, we don't want to see that. We just want to see you do that one thing we like you to do.
Oh, who's your favorite internet comedian, the sketch artist?
My boyfriend is actually a content creator, so obviously it's him. Like, obviously.
Okay.
But if you come on, babes, watch it. You're gonna get me in trouble. I love you, Christopher.
You can't name him. That's not.
If there's some comment sections, I guarantee you he's in it. I guarantee you. So he's there. He don't play about me, what? Okay.
I'm not mad at that. He shouldn't.
I'll be in the comment section where he be on podcast stuff too. But you did ask me my favorite. You know, Chris Mosley is definitely my favorite in my heart space. But to give you a broader, I like this. It's this girl in Atlanta, and she's real country, and she does these. She reenacts
Kendra something.
Her name is B something.
Oh no, that's a different one. Yeah,
she's light skinned. She's real pretty. She'll like reenact the episode of Power with this other guy that does it, and they'll just reenact the scene like from something, but it's so off the wall, but it's so hilarious.
Are you talking about Lou Young and
yes, Lou Young.
Yes. Yeah, I think it's Blaine Cub.
B Lynn, yes.
That's it. Yeah.
I freaking love them. I love them, love them. Anytime I see them on my timeline, I'm like, stop what you're doing. I got to watch it. They crack me up. I don't follow a lot of internet comedians because, again, we kind of have this weird rivalry with them.
I don't know what that noise is, but it's like a rattlesnake over there.
Is it my mic hitting my hair?
Oh, it is.
Okay, because that's usually what it is.
I'm like, damn, I don't know where that's coming from.
No, it's always that. It's always
have you, Kendra G Media, have you seen her?
No.
Oh, my God.
Wait, why does that sound familiar though?
Oh, girl is nothing short of brilliant.
Like mom likes sometimes my mom will send me videos and stuff. She supports. She loves all of it, and I feel like, you know, that's good. They're getting some love from my family.
Okay, but that ain't like, you know, no, that seems a little risque.
I'm a comedy snob. That's what all my friends tell me. So like when I watch you for the first time, I'm evaluating. I'm critical. I'm just like, that joke is flat. You know, whatever. So I don't. Everybody could be laughing. I could be like, that was a poorly written joke. And then everybody look at me like, dang, Heather. And I'm like, I'm a purist, guys. I've been doing this a long time.
What's a great like? Give me one joke that was just. A phenomenally written and delivered joke that you or your boyfriend didn't do.
Me and my boyfriend didn't do. That's funny.
I gotta disclaim y'all both now.
All my closest friends are comics too, though. So it's like I'm surrounded. I'm surrounded by like super talented people. It's crazy. I did an interview for this magazine, and they were like, who are the people you like to work with? And I was like, bro, everybody I know is talented. Like, bro, I can't just limit this to five. I'm going to have everybody else mad at me. Okay, so a really well-written joke. Chappelle's Cosby joke is great. That's one that people know without having to look up. Again, brilliant. John Mulaney has a joke about The Fugitive. Remember that movie, The Fugitive?
Mm-hmm.
Anytime somebody can come into the 21st century and make a joke about something that came out in 1990, that's brilliant.
That is pretty brilliant. I have to hear this one, though.
Yeah, no, because you don't see it coming, and you're like, oh, my God, the joke is the future. Oh, my God. I love it when they can make me go, oh, in the audience, and I'm like, oh, my God, it's so dope.
My friend. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
There was a guy, I'm just sitting up, this was years ago, just sitting at home doing nothing, and Comedy Central comes on, and I cannot for the life of me remember this guy. It's a white guy, and he ended up ODing.
Which, Sam Kennison, Chris Farley.
It wasn't like somebody that you
I was going
to
say, all of them? Okay. Like that's what they do over there. AMG.
But this guy had one of the funniest half hours of comedy.
Greg and Giraldo.
It was not. He was like, he looked like he did heroin. But it was like just silly shit.
Mitch Hedberg. Okay.
That guy.
Yo. Oh no, he's a genius. Like, he's considered one of the goats.
Yo, I had never heard of this motherfucker before, and he's I'm at home, literally in tears, crying. It was me, my brother, and my ex at the time, and we all on the couch, rolling.
Right.
Oh my.
Oh no, he's definitely on the what you have the urban side, which is what we call black comedy, and then the mainstream side, which is basically mainstream. And he, on the mainstream side, he's considered definitely one of the legends. You're good when your clones pop up. So there's a million little clones of people trying to sound like him. And
yeah,
you know, man, he was definitely amazing.
He was definitely, he was different.
Yeah. I like
delivery was though. Wild too.
I like Mean. I actually like Mean. I like Mean when it's done well. I like anything when it's done well. I'll say that. I don't like Mean for the sake of being mean. Who's a mean comic? Tony Hinchcliffe. Kill Tony. Mean comic. And Anthony Jeselnik. Mean comic. Amy Schumer. Mean comic. But, I mean, there are the people that are going to say mean things. You know what I mean? But when done well, you will spit your drink out. You know, you'll be like, I can't believe you said that.
What lane, like, what category would you put your brand of comedy under?
I've always struggled with this because I'm just me, but I definitely probably work more mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times I've had black comics that they don't know what to do with me. And they're just like, okay, guys, come into this stage. This next girl, she's really smart. And she's a little different. And I'm just like, I'm from Plymouth and Wyoming. What are you talking about? You know what I mean? Like, I grew up in the same city you grew up in. I caught the same city buses. You know what I'm saying? What are you talking about? Or whatever. So I just, you know, my name is Heather. And I'm definitely not a Comic View Def Jam style comedian. And I actually like that about myself. I never wanted to be that style. That just doesn't fit my personality.
I mean, but as a people, we aren't a monolith.
We're not.
You know, and I don't understand, like I like skateboarding. Not personally me skateboarding,
mm-hmm.
but I like the X Games type shit.
Yeah, they're cool.
That doesn't mean I didn't grow up on 7 Mile in Southfield.
True.
You know.
But you still have a lot of people that they'll just kind of judge you, and then they have to get to know you. Yeah. And those are the people that say stuff like, hey, when I first met you, I thought you was okay, but I wasn't. And now you know. So let's move forward. But you don't have to tell me that you thought I wasn't good enough. You know what I'm saying? Like, so that's unnecessary. So I got a lot of that in the beginning because I had just, when I started comedy, I had just got my master's degree. So they were just looking at me like, college girl. And it was like, yeah.
What'd you get a master's in?
I have a master's in business administration. I have an MBA.
Okay. Yeah, you are a little highfalutin.
Wait. And I'm doing a show with Robert Kennedy. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, I'm bougie.
Excuse me. You know, I'm going to put my pinky up while I drink now.
What time is tea? This is my whole life. I went to an alternative school and came back to Plymouth and Wyoming. You know what I'm saying?
I'm not mad at that.
So I'm used to it. And then one day I realized that I was all of those things. I was a hood girl. I was a smart girl. And nobody was gonna make me choose. And it was like once all my worlds came together, I feel like my writing opened up, my comedy opened up, because I was like, I'm not about to be white girl Heather when I'm north of 8 Mile and black girl Heather. No, I'm not doing that. Y'all getting one Heather. And she is all of the above and whatever.
Although those same people laugh and be white guy Jerome when you cross 8 Mile too.
I mean, we all got our police voice. You know what I'm saying?
You know, your seat go up a little bit. The seatbelt come on. Stop.
No, officer.
Yeah.
You know, we all do it or whatever. And the ones that don't, you know.
Get arrested.
Yeah, get arrested.
Easily.
Absolutely.
Oh, I'm just not, just be honest. so you got a show coming up with Robert Kennedy. RFK?
He's named after his father, too.
Okay, when's the show? I don't know much about the Kennedys.
Okay, so John F. Kennedy was president.
I remember that.
And then he got murdered.
And his brother and was if you, attorney
wait a minute. General? Yes, his brother was attorney general, also got murdered.
Yeah.
If you go to Dallas, Texas, and you just be in the back of the Uber, the Uber driver's going to be like, have you seen the grassy knoll? And you're going to be like, you mean where Kennedy got assassinated? And they're going to take you over there and be like, right there, that's the spot. So it was a really big deal in American history before our time, obviously, but a really big deal. His family is like, a lot of people consider the Kennedys to be like royalty, American, the closest thing we have to a royal family.
Yeah.
On the white side. Okay, that's very important, on the white side. I'm pretty sure there are some black people of a certain age that also love that family because he did get all the votes. He definitely had the minority vote on lock.
He definitely did.
His brother was also assassinated. And then, of course, you may remember when the president's son died in that plane accident. So their families had a lot of tragedy.
Yeah.
But they like to name their kids after each other or whatever. So this is the second RFK Jr., who is putting his bid in to run as an independent candidate for presidency. And in an attempt to break up that bipartisan issue that this country has, a lot of countries have more than two parties, and you know whatever.
We got one party.
This ain't no political.
Just got different letters. I'm just saying. That's a whole other conversation.
But, you gotta watch that. You gotta watch that. The foreign press. You gotta read like the British paper and the Al Jazeera. You gotta read like you know what I'm saying.
It's sad that they took Al Jazeera off the airwaves too, because
Al Jazeera was doing too much.
they were doing too much. Like, they didn't care. They was gonna give it to
too
you.
Much game. Yeah, they was giving us too much game.
They was gonna
give
it to
go
you.
On the dark web. They're still there, and then you can see what other people think of America, and then you're like, yo, is that how we look to y'all? And it's like, oh yeah. And then you start looking at you, be like, oh, I kind of can see it a little bit. I kind of see it a lot.
I hate the same shit. Like, it's just fucked up. Yeah. You know? What am I going to do about it?
That's why all the terrorist cells and stuff, they always go out of their way to be like, we don't hate black and brown people. Like, we hate America, but we don't hate black people. Like, thank you for...
You know, it's funny. My middle daughter, she went to Michigan. And one year, she was talking about going... Jeez, I forget what country it is in Africa, but a highly populated Arab country. I can't remember which one. And I like, you know what? Okay, I'm cool with that. Just stay away from the white folks. Mm. They're not going to kidnap you, sweetie. If they kidnap you, it's practice. Because they know they ain't going to get shit for you.
I went to Israel a few years ago, and my mother was terrified I was going to get human trafficked. And I was like, they'll bring me back. All this black girl Detroit mouth. I was like, because you know what? I don't be coming over here after 9 o'clock. No, we don't do that. No, we ain't doing that. Missionary only. You know, I'm only doing missionary before 7:30. Send her back. Send her home.
Yeah, you definitely ain't making
she
no money.
She running off the clients. I don't like how you talking to me right now. You got me messed up.
I'm sorry. So when is the show? Where is it at? Who else is on the bill?
Yeah, that was quite a dude. That was quite that was a
definitely a left turn.
They're not gonna have me represent the brand no more.
Mikey's gonna kill me. Like, bro, you supposed to talk about the damn show. I'm like, my bad.
All right, bet. Okay, so we have time. We have time. The show is at the Royal Oak Music Theater, first of all. Amazing theatrical space. April 21st, 2024, 7:30 PM. You can hit up Kennedy24.org. I asked for talking points. Mikey did not send them. No, it's Kennedy24.org, and it'll take you right to directly to the link, because I don't think they want you to get the tickets through Royal Oak. I think they want you to go through the Kennedy website. because all the links I've seen are the Kennedy's links. So Kennedy24.org. And at the same time, you can learn a little bit more about the candidate, and you can make a contribution to his campaign if you like. Or you can just come see the comedy and take a picture with a Kennedy. That's so cool. To take a picture. That's cool.
Pretty cool. You know, maybe a picture with Heather J. Even cooler.
I'll be there too. I'll also be there.
Somebody invited me to, and I'm not going to say who the politician was, but it's not, it wasn't Kennedy. But they invited me to a campaign fundraiser. Shit, was $100 a ticket. Bruh. I'm not even voting for you.
Okay, so these tickets are $150.
Actually, I'm not mad at that, though, because you get a whole show.
Yeah, yeah.
With several comedians.
Yeah.
Like, no, this was just the candidate. Like, you showing up is $100.
It costs a lot of money to run for anything above, like, anything federal. That costs a lot. That costs millions of dollars.
Okay.
I mean, you maybe can become mayor of a small town for a few grand, but you're not gonna be president of the USA. Like, and not spend $5, $6, $10 million.
Oh no, that's not even gonna get you on the ballot $5 to $10 million for president.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I think Biden raised like, I don't know, $200 million, $150 million.
I'm sure
in a weekend or something like that.
I have no idea what I'm talking. I never studied political finance. I don't know.
I used to be big in the politics until they start getting closer and closer together. And it's just like, it's the same coin, just different sides. And I'm just...
I think politics are fascinating for different countries and stuff, especially as Black people get more traveling and getting out the country more. You got to understand the politics of the place you're going. Because everywhere, not America. Everybody don't have inalienable rights and privileges and all that. You got to understand how things work where you are. And for no other reason, stay out of jail. Oh, in a New York minute, especially because you're American.
Yeah. Oh my God.
And we have a bad reputation, and they think we're coming over there to ruin their country. So you gotta understand where you're going. And
I have done nothing to besmirch the reputation of the United States. That had nothing to do with me.
Well, this is all before we were born. This dates back to World War I, when the soldiers were overseas acting a fool, getting women pregnant, leaving. You know what I mean? At World War II, the same thing. The soldiers went over there and clown. And so we got a reputation for being terrible.
You can't hold motherfuckers. You can't hold that against motherfuckers, though.
Well, you know, if
your country, American, like, put my life on the line, at least I should get it some pussy.
Well, I mean, that's obviously what they thought.
I'm just saying.
But the government that had all these half American kids
probably didn't like it.
Probably was like, you came in over here. Our daughters were virgins. You left them pregnant with babies. You know what I'm saying? What's this? We can't find you.
Yeah, you know, that child support had to be an issue.
wasn't no welfare back then. Wasn't no bridge card. You know what I'm saying? Somebody had to feed this baby.
Yeah, there was
a lot of bad, just because Americans were free. So, you know, a lot of bad behaviors and stuff.
Americans.
Well, you know, yeah. That kind of goes without. That's understood. Yeah. The sun is always understood.
Yeah, we gotta throw that in there, you know.
But we're gonna have a good time. It's gonna be a good show. Everybody on the show is amazing. The guy that's producing the show, Mike Binder, he's from Detroit as well, but he moved away years ago because he had an HBO deal. Like he's been kind of popping for years. And him and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. are good friends in real life. Like they're best friends.
Mm-hmm.
So when Mr. Kennedy announced his election idea, his friends, who a lot of his friends are entertainers, were like, okay, we'll do shows. We'll, you know, this is what we do. This is how we show our love. Comedy's a love language for us. If we love you, we're gonna put on the show. So
that's pretty dope.
You know, if you pass away and ain't no money to bury you, we're gonna be like, well, we're gonna go tell some jokes and get this money. So we find a way to infuse.
Start writing a monologue for your boy. It's just
get some life insurance. What's wrong with you?
Well, when you didn't have heart surgery, getting life insurance ain't all that easy.
Now you gotta get that. You gotta get that Ed McMahon, the one that be on TV, like no previous medical history.
Yeah, them niggas still want to charge you $800 a month for $20,000.
they basically just want you to prepay.
Pretty much.
Prepay.
I'm like, bro. Yeah. I save pennies in a sock.
Shit. We need this podcast to work. We gotta get this podcast. So yo, we can go ahead and prepay for that funeral.
I told my daughter, I said, you know, this it ain't gonna really pop off till I die.
Mm. I mean, the Mona Lisa wasn't worth nothing until Da Vinci died. I mean, you know what I'm saying? That's how art is.
I'm gonna be so pissed off in the afterlife, though. And I'm haunting a lot of motherfuckers. If that's an option, okay. I'm on niggas' ass.
Okay. Okay. Yes, I'm haunting. Let's hope it's not an option. Ooh, okay.
I hope it is.
Nobody wants the Omen intellectually petty.
Ooh. I get to the pearly gates and they like, what job would you like? Haunting that. I don't haunting even want to hear that.
Haunting everybody that wasn't nice to me.
Oh my God. Oh, it's a couple exes. Ooh, 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 ooh. Fucking you up in the nursing home, baby. Woo-hoo.
And then Jesus gonna come tap you on the shoulder. Jesus gonna be like, baby,
you're doing too much, bro.
Hey, he gonna be like, hey, remember that time they killed me? And I ain't do nothing. Okay, so hey, remember that? Do you remember that time? For real. You remember that?
Okay. Yeah, like, bro, come on, man. Let me do my, you know, I'm top of the class over here.
Tell me a story. She hurt your feel. Oh, she broke your heart. Oh, okay.
Yeah, thorns. Why you think I'm here, bro?
She's going to play his hands and be like, thorns, thorns. What you know about the thorns in your head?
Oh, that's
funny. Okay. It's Easter week. It's okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. No, it's okay to talk about Jesus. It's Easter week.
Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I would hunt some people.
I'm a pray for you.
What's your, and I know we got just a couple minutes. One more question. Favorite sitcom by a comedian?
Depending on what point in my life, maybe Roseanne, because she was a woman and she wasn't beautiful and she became a star.
Definitely ugly.
Okay. I'm over here trying to be politically correct.
She ain't.
Yeah, no.
But the show was funny. The first run.
Yes, I'm saying the first. That's what I'm saying, like the one from the 90s.
Yeah, pretty funny.
I used to like to watch that show. Seinfeld at a certain point.
Seinfeld is freaking hilarious to me. Although, he is the most unfunny stand-up comedian ever to me.
He's situationally funny. So his show was him creating the situations where he would be funny in.
Yeah, the show was hilarious to me. But when they went to the clips of him doing stand-up, I'm like, bro, how'd you get this show? Like,
He's good. Seinfeld's a G. Yeah, he's a G. But, like, no comic is liked by everybody. I know you want me to say Martin, but I'm not.
I'm gonna keep it a buck, and they're gonna try to take my card away from me. It didn't age well.
I don't think so either.
Like it was great when I was younger, and I was, you know, I'm still immature to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
But I when I was a lot more immature, it was good for that time.
My black vote is gonna go to my wife and kids, my wife and kids. Cause I love Damon Wayans. I love him to death. That's
a great show too.
And to me it was just really well written and well executed and represented his voice as a stand up comic very well.
Yeah, it was a great show. Yeah, I love that show.
That's the answer to that question.
Any if people want to get in touch with you, they want to book you, how do they go about doing that?
Book me. I'm currently accepting dates from three different tours right now. So I'm not doing a lot because I'm tired. And I still write, you know, I still have scripts and stuff due as well. If you want to support me, go watch those movies on Tubi that everybody wants to make fun of. Mine are the ones that are good.
You'll name them?
If you can't roast it, it's a Heather J. I was just like, if you go to my IG page, my Instagram is Heather J-A-Y-H. Please follow me on Instagram. If you go to my IG, my films are pinned at the top. You can see what I have already out. And then I have some more in the can. I have some in pre-production. I have some I'm writing right now. Like it's a machine. Buy my book, go on Amazon and buy my book. Maybe Shorty Should Be a Detective. It's a detective series about a hood rat from Detroit that solves murders. What? Oh my God. You love it already.
Why is that not a movie?
I'm working on a deal right now. I'm working on it. That means like we're having conversations about licensing the characters.
If you need an old fat black dude, I got you.
Central casting. No, I'm just That was an LA answer. You see how they're rubbing off on me? That was an LA answer. Like, sir.
I'm gonna cry a little bit, but that's okay. I'm gonna go sleep on the couch in your honor.
Man. Man. My mama got me a bed so that when I came back home, I didn't have to sleep on the couch because she was like, I'm going to get you a bed so that when you come home. Because I was like, I can't sleep on another couch ever again for the rest of my life.
Wait a minute, was this after you got your master's too? I didn't ask you that.
After, yeah. I didn't start comedy till after. Yeah. I didn't want to move to LA and get no real job. When was I going to have time to pursue comedy if I was working 70 hours a week for somebody's corporation? No.
Okay.
I use my degree every day, though. I use it every day.
Well, I'm sure you do now.
To run my own business.
Yeah, things is going good. You know, but the broke aspect, not so much.
I was just answering all the questions on Jeopardy. Like, she can answer all the questions on Jeopardy, bro.
Oh, my God. I can't thank Mikey enough for this one. This has been, I don't think I've ever laughed more.
I'm glad I made you laugh.
This has been a beautiful conversation. I truly, truly, truly appreciate you.
Thank you so much.
And if there is anything I can do for you, and that's not going to come out right. But you and, I was about to say you and your guy, but I didn't, no Diddy. That's the first time I said that.
I fear it won't be the last. I fear no Diddy about to be the new no homo and pause.
It absolutely is. Everybody been working that into the repertoire, and bro.
Okay, I'm gonna be at One Mike Stand. Mike Epps has a new club in downtown Detroit on April 9th. So come see us. Come hang out.
Sweet. When is April 9th?
Tuesday after next.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I see. I live in Ohio currently.
Oh, well, then you'll have to wait for me. Oh, yeah, I feel like I have something in Ohio coming up. What part of Ohio?
I'm in Cleveland.
Oh, no, I haven't been to Cleveland in a while. I need to get back to Cleveland, though. Thank you for reminding me. I'm going to put no, you guys have about four good clubs there. You got Hilarities.
Yeah.
You got the Improv.
Yeah.
You got Funny Bone. And I feel like I'm missing one. Laughing Ben something.
Oh, I can't remember the name of it, but I know what you're talking about.
Looney something.
Yeah. Yeah. They got some good comedy clubs here. I've been to a couple of shows.
No. I'm going to Christopher, if you're watching this, Cleveland. He books all our shows. So,
yeah, Christopher, get on it. Come in. And your boy needs a few tickets, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Sell, we come to your town.
Definitely. Trying to look like the big man at work. Like, yeah, okay. Bitches, I got tickets.
I'm bringing out a table full of women. Okay.
Oh, we're not going to do that.
We love a table full of beautiful women in a comedy show. We're going to have a good time. It's a whole bunch of pretty girls, and we're going to have a good time.
No, they will be all fat and ugly.
Okay, sir. I don't know why that was necessary.
Wow, now you got something to say, huh, Chris?
Oh wait, he coming?
Yeah. No, bring the women. Yes, I snitched on you, bro.
I told you he was gonna pop up. He always does. I love you, baby.
I'm just fucking with you, man. Please do not punch me if you happen to see me.
No, he's the nicest guy in the world until he's not. You know, typical black man. Nicest guy in the world until he's not.
Right. Like I said, don't punch me. Yeah. Anyway.
No, we definitely got you. We got you comped.
No doubt. Let me know. And if there's anything I can do to help promote the event, I got you. This has been a treat. Truly, you are welcome back anytime you want to.
Thank you.
Chris, come on, bro. What you got? Come through. Anyway, on that note, I'm going to let y'all.
What are you saying?
No. On the show.
I can't see that. I'm not looking at the chat. I don't even want to look at the chat.
No. I just don't. Oh, my God.
Oh, I thought he was still typing. Okay,
no, like, he's not saying anything. I'm saying if he would like to come on the show as a guest.
Yeah. That's between me. That's me as business. I'll stay out of that. No.
Anyway, let me get out of here.
All right, thank you. So much.
And shout out to you again, Mikey. And don't forget to check out the show the 21st of next month at the Royal Oak Theater.
April 21st.
Robert Kennedy in support of his presidential campaign. Shout out to him. We out. Y'all have a good one.
Bye.
Peace. Yo, this is a fucking funny show. oh my goodness, man. My whole fucking face hurts. Next week, we got the number one female advocate for men. Say What She Wants will be on the show at 7 o'clock. And filmmaker Charles Murray will be on at 5 o'clock. Y'all already know this is Jobs. This has been another episode of Intellectually Petty Radio. And just for shits and giggles, don't forget, if you're looking for a hotel in the Metro Detroit area, look no further than the Cambria Hotel. Let me see. Hold on. I know I got it. 600 West Lafayette Boulevard in downtown Detroit for your finest dining and I don't know how you, what's the other word when you spend the night. They got dope ass hotel, basically. Anyway, on that note, I'm out. Y'all have a good one. Peace.